and welcome back to the Unleashed podcast. I'm super happy to be back in your ears. Today I'm interviewing Sarah Liz King. So she is an exercise physiologist and she's going to chat to us a little bit about hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is a long word, but it's basically the loss of your period. Is it from mostly exercise and sometimes stress as well, just like lifestyle factors that are out of balance basically?
Yeah, that's right. So exercising too much, not quite eating enough, and or too much stress, those are the main causes.
Yeah, I've seen girls post about it a bit online because it's often talked about in the bodybuilding community, I guess, because you're pushing your body to extreme. So not everyone does lose it. A lot of the girls still have theirs, which is good. But I thought it would be awesome for you to be able to give us some advice and insights into it. So do you want to give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and what we will be covering as well?
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, my name is Sarah. You can find me online pretty much everywhere at Sarah Liz King. I'm an accredited exercise physiologist and health coach, and I mainly work with women who are recovering from, like you mentioned before, hypothalamic amenorrhea. And then I also run an online coaching program. So online strength and conditioning for women who are looking to have a better balance with exercise. So again, might have had a history of disordered eating or an over-reliance on exercise, and they just want to find the joy and the balance in moving their bodies again. Outside of that, I live in beautiful Bondi in Sydney. I've got a very cute dog who you might hear bark in the background at some point, but hopefully not. And definitely when I'm not working, you can find me at the beach, which is my happy place.
First up, I wanted to touch on what is hypothalamic amenorrhea, but we kind of talked about it in the intro. But are there any signs that people could look out for to know that it's definitely that the loss is caused by overexercise or not eating enough kind of thing compared to maybe another condition that might cause the loss of a period?
Yeah, so I'll give a little bit more of an in-depth definition. Hypothalamic amenorrhea is a form of secondary amenorrhea. So by that we mean that you have had your periods regularly at some point in your life, and then they have gone missing again. With hypothalamic amenorrhea, our hypothalamus in our brain has decided to shut down our menstrual cycle, like I mentioned before, because of either too much exercise, not eating enough, and or too much psychological stress. So this energy imbalance component, which is a form of stress on the body, and also the psychological stress component can be a factor as well. For hypothalamic amenorrhea, we kind of classify it as the loss of your period for 3 months or greater, and it is a diagnosis of exclusion. So that basically means we're ruling out all other reasons why you might have lost your period. Some of the clues that could lead you to, I guess, knowing that HA, which is the abbreviated version of hypothalamic amenorrhea, is the cause of your missing period, would be that your periods started to go missing when you made significant or even small changes to your diet or your exercise. You noticed that there was a change in your weight. So you may have lost some weight either intentionally or unintentionally, and that's when it decided to change. There are other symptoms kind of associated with the loss of that period. And most of those symptoms are from the low estrogen from not having a period. So you could notice more vaginal dryness, loss of libido. You might also notice things related to that low energy availability. So things like feeling cold all the time, feeling really tired, changes in your sleep, changes in your appetite, changes to the appearance of like your hair, skin and nails, a decrease in your performance at the gym, noticing that your moods might be lower or on more of a roller coaster rather than stable. The list goes on, but those are some of the most frequent ones that people often mention. Another really strange one is feeling like you need to like go to the toilet all the time. So you need to wee all the time, waking up in the night to go to the toilet multiple times. Like all of those are signs of low estrogen as well. And there's also things that you can't see. So the impact on your bone health and your heart health from, you know, having that missing period. Yeah. But that's the long-winded definition of what this is.
Why is a misdiagnosis so common?
It is. There's like a lot of crossover with other conditions. So most commonly, PCOS is given as a diagnosis because there are common crossover points. So when you're not having a period, you aren't ovulating. And when you're not ovulating, you can have the appearance of lots of follicles in your ovaries. This can happen if you have HA and it can happen if you have PCOS.
Mm.
But the appearance of polycystic ovaries doesn't mean that you have PCOS.
Mm.
So that's really one key differentiation between the two of them. And what drives missing periods in PCOS is for a completely different reason. So on the left-hand side with HA, we have obviously low energy intake, too much stress. With PCOS, we have a change in how our ovaries are functioning due to usually insulin resistance, which actually leads to the production of higher androgens, which are male sex hormones, which then lead the ovaries to malfunction and for us to have irregular or absent periods. The higher androgen levels in PCOS also give these secondary characteristics of PCOS. So hirsutism, which is like a pattern of male style hair growth, so chin, back hair, chest hair. You may notice more like central abdominal weight gain for no real explained reason. And also the appearance of acne can be signs of higher androgen levels.
Mm.
But those can be confirmed on a blood test as well. And we would also see usually slightly different appearance of sex hormones and how they would be represented on blood tests. So normally in HA, we have higher follicle stimulating hormone, lower luteinizing hormone. And for PCOS, usually that's frequently flipped, but not always the case. So you have to take into effect a person's lifestyle as well as some of these more objective measures through blood tests and other kind of symptom questionnaires.
Mm. Random question, which I don't know if is a silly question, but other people might think the same. If there's, it would be good if you could chat on the long-term health issues of having, what's the short word you use for it?
HA, yeah.
The long-term impacts of it, but do those things also impact you if you're on the contraceptive pill because you're not technically having a period, or is that different still?
Slightly different and never a silly question.
Yeah.
So low energy availability can affect anyone. The consequences, like one of the consequences of low energy availability, and again, low energy availability is exercising too much, not eating enough. So that imbalance of energy intake and energy output, it can happen to a person of any body size. You don't have to be an athlete for it to happen. And it can happen to people who are experiencing HA or who are on the pill. The pill will mask it, obviously, because you are having withdrawal bleeds.
Mm.
So the oral contraceptive pill, and I'm not here to bash it. If people use it because it's their preferred method of contraception, that's great. But it's just helpful to kind of understand how it works. So when you're taking the pill, you are taking a synthetic form of hormones that tricks your body into basically not ovulating.
Mm.
So when you take that week of the sugar pills, your body's basically just getting a withdrawal from the synthetic hormones that you've been taking. And so you get a withdrawal bleed, but it's not a period in the sense of the period you get naturally within your own menstrual cycle. It's just from a drop in those synthetic hormones. The health impacts of low energy availability can be there, but you wouldn't know whether or not you're experiencing them unless you're like incredibly fatigued all of the time, your performance is constantly dropping. Like all of those factors you should always address if you think that you're not getting that good energy balance in, whether you are or you aren't on the pill. Definitely take a look at changing those habits to make sure that you support your body with enough energy, the right balance of movement, and enough rest. I think we can all benefit from that. I think the hardest thing is if you're on the pill and maybe it's masking the fact that you won't have regular periods when you get off the pill, which is the story as old as time for the clients that I see. The hormone levels within the contraceptive pill aren't high enough to support your bone health.
Mm.
So sometimes people can have impacts on their bone health longer term that they just didn't know about. And that's probably the most common one that I see. But HA is reversible in the fact that you can get pregnant and your fertility will be fine once you recover. Similarly, the effects on your bone health and your heart health can be improved once you recover.
Mm. And how come you think it affects women in the fitness industry more? Is it just because women tend to overdo it, or they might be trying to fit within, I guess, society's standards of a look, so aren't fueling themselves enough, kind of thing?
I definitely think there are beauty and body and fitness standards that a lot of us try to chase. I think you just have to look to social media and kind of see what's being promoted within fitness to kind of go, well, that's probably not attainable for everybody, but that's being pushed as kind of the optimal, or the thing that we should all be striving for. Yeah. And I think that's one of the factors. I think you can add to that that we all grew up and we all exist in this world where dieting is kind of the norm. Mm. And it's expected that women will go through many cycles of dieting within their lifetime, but it's not always promoted in a healthy or a balanced way. And most people adopt a lot of behaviors around how they eat that can be quite disordered and lead them to sometimes unintentionally not give their body enough energy, or be scared to actually eat enough for their body because maybe they have gotten down to a body size, shape, weight that was their goal. And despite that, their body's actually telling them, hey, we don't feel healthy here. So an absent period is a sign, it's a red flag that your body's not feeling healthy, it's not feeling safe, it's not functioning optimally, even though you've kind of gone, well, but that's what society wants us to be. Your body doesn't care about what society wants. It only wants to be functioning, and it will let you know when it's not feeling good.
Yeah. What are some lifestyle factors that people could start to implement if they are suffering from this?
I would say one of the biggest ones is make sure that you're not doing your exercise or your training in a fasted state. So make sure that you're really fueling your body for those workouts. I know that fasting is definitely something that's come into popularity, and there's like all kinds of people saying great things about it. But if your body is, you know, if your periods are really, really light, or they're really irregular, or they've become absent, definitely make sure you're having good fueling in and around and before your workouts. Second to that, I would make sure that you're getting, make sure you're getting enough carbohydrates. It's like one of those things that people are really fearful of. And what we know about hypothalamic amenorrhea recovery is like, it's not just how much energy you're putting back into your body, so that energy availability, but it's also this concept of carbohydrate availability that actually functions to tell our brain, hey, there's enough of our preferred energy source around, carbs, glucose, so that we can, you know, we don't have to worry. We know that fuel is coming. And the third would be, make sure that you're not falling into the more is always better mentality when it comes to exercise. More isn't better. A well-designed program, smarter training is better. And for a lot of people to get their periods back, it does require you to modify your exercise for a short period of time. And that might be reducing the intensity or the number of days per week that you're going to the gym. And it is a short-term change to just help your body get back to functioning. And then when you do want to increase that intensity level again, it's just making sure that, again, you have the energy required to do those workouts, to fuel them, and then to also recover and benefit from them as well.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points, because I see the fasting thing pop up heaps online, and then I think a lot of people have become more aware that it's not always optimal for women. And I keep trying to push that women's bodies are different to men, so we don't just wake up with the same energy for the whole entire month. Like, 1 week will be, like you want to curl up and watch your favorite TV show and eat some chocolate. And then I've been seeing girls online even now who won't even eat a piece of chocolate because they think it'll make them overweight, which is crazy. And then with the carb thing, people still think that carbs are bad. And because I eat mostly plant-based as well, my carb intake is probably higher than the average person. And I probably work out less than what people think because I've been moving house and go through some big life changes. So in the last 2 months, probably only 3 days a week. And I'm actually in like one of my best ever physiques now because I'm not inflamed from the stress and not like overly tired. And if I want to have the day off exercise, I'll just walk the dog or something. And I'm so relaxed about it. But I think when people are trying to go 6 days a week and cardio and work at their full-time jobs and look after the house, like the stress actually makes your body go into fight or flight mode, and it's actually worse off for you rather than just stepping into your feminine energy, and your body will kind of balance things out. And same as if you're not eating enough, people try to diet really hard, but if you're on limited calories, you start to move around less during the day anyway, whereas if you've actually got fuel, you'll be like power walking here and doing chores and just burning more energy from doing daily tasks instead of just being really slow and not really worth it kind of thing. So health can kind of be the opposite of what people think.
Yeah. And it's so difficult, right? Because if you've had all these beliefs that have been, you know, entrenched for years about the fact that, you know, you have to maintain the strictest routine and, you know, be go, go, go all the time, just keep, you know, pushing through, the taking the step back is terrifying because you have these deep-rooted beliefs that your worst fears are going to become reality, that your body's going to change exponentially, that you're going to become, you know, one of the biggest fears that I hear is like, I'm just going to become lazy and I'm going to sit on the couch and I'm going to, you know, melt into that one place forever and never want to move again. And the opposite actually happens. They're like, oh, I have more energy. I'm not so anxious all the time. I don't feel guilty for taking a rest day. But you have to gain all of that evidence yourself. And that is the biggest, scariest step. And sometimes you need a little bit of support there to kind of go, we're going to hold your ground. We'll be here. Like we can move through this together, which is why I think, you know, getting coaching, getting support can be really helpful to help support the changes in habits that people want to make and that are going to be helpful for them long term.
Is weight gain always required for someone to recover?
Usually it is. The reason as to why isn't necessarily because a person may be quote unquote underweight. There are plenty of people that I've worked with who are, for all intents and purposes, a very, I guess, you know, by our standards, normal, healthy weights. And it is because their body has been in this stressful environment of being underfueled and, you know, maybe going through more psychological stress. But the being underfueled part is something that we have to reverse. And when you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, obviously we think about our sex hormones shutting down. But it's like your body going into the equivalent of low power mode on your phone. So it's also down-regulating your metabolism, your thyroid hormones. So when we introduce more food, we're not only introducing more food to help, you know, pay back that energy debt that we've created, but we want to actually help the body upregulate all of those other processes that have slowed down, like our metabolism slowing down, our digestion slowing down, all of these other things. So for some people, it does mean necessary weight gain to restore to their body's preferred optimal weight. For some people, they overshoot and then their weight drops a little bit. There's plenty of different experiences that happen, but for the majority of people, their weight does have to change a little bit.
Yeah. And just a random question I just thought of, what is it that got you into this specific line of work? Is it something that you used to suffer with, or is it just something that popped up with your coaching and things in the past?
Yeah, so I had hypothalamic amenorrhea for 10 years.
10 years.
And I had no idea what it was. So I dabbled in, I was a personal trainer while I was going through university and a Pilates instructor, and I dabbled in bodybuilding and kind of all of these things led me to losing my period. And I developed an eating disorder, which obviously played a role in me not getting enough energy in. But even when I had recovered from my eating disorder and, you know, I'd gotten to the place where all my doctors wanted to be, doctors wanted me to be, I still didn't have my period and I was misdiagnosed with PCOS and, you know, told that it didn't matter or just to go on the pill and don't worry about it. Just come back when you want to get pregnant. And I was like, oh, this doesn't feel like the correct answer. And I also got diagnosed with osteopenia, so quite low bone mineral density. And it just made me keep searching for answers until I finally found out and figured out that hypothalamic amenorrhea was what it was. And then once I kind of, my eyes were open, I was the one that went back to my doctor and I was like, I think I have this. And she was like, oh, that makes sense. And I basically just asked her for her support in terms of, I didn't have any scales, but, you know, tracking my weight and seeing what was happening with my bloods every couple of months and, you know, going on that journey of making sure that I was taking more rest and eating more food and trying to manage my stress. And from that point, I recovered. And I kind of always said to myself, like, when I feel fully recovered, when my cycles are regular, when I know my relationship with food is amazing, I would love to help other people through the same experience because it was wild and one of the most difficult things I think I've ever gone through. So that is how I landed doing this work. It was basically just starting to share my story.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people were like, this is me too.
So did you have to kind of coach the doctor through how to help you?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did. It was helpful for her. And she was a great doctor, don't get me wrong. But she was like, you know what? This didn't even cross my mind. And it is something that we should definitely screen more for. So a lot of what I do is also educating other health professionals and kind of what to look out for, what are the right questions to ask, et cetera, to help people get a better diagnosis. And then if they do get a diagnosis, how they can actually help them through the treatment. So, you know, whether that be linking them up with a dietitian, an exercise physiologist, psychologist, whatever it might be, to make the necessary changes and also kind of keep track of them every few months to see objectively how their body is responding, because hormones are slow moving creatures. Like the lifestyle changes that we make can feel very fast and happen in a very short period of time. And still, it can take months for our body to catch up and for our hormones to kind of start increasing again.
And do you want to give a little bit of an insight into what your program is as well? So is it like a course that people can do with things like that?
Yeah. So we have an online program called Healing HA. So there are 8 modules and it basically takes you through the ins and the outs of every single detail you'll ever need to know about HA and all of the changes step by step of how to eat more, how to modify your exercise, and also how to manage your stress. But more importantly, we also address topics that are fundamental to making sure that you don't fall back into a pattern that might have led you to HA in the first place. So addressing things like body image, perfectionist tendencies, self-compassion, how to manage your emotions, other kind of like supplements and things that can help your HA journey, how to track your cycle so that you can make sure you recover, but you stay recovered. So we have a self-paced version and then we also offer group coaching in addition to that program. And yeah, our next round of opening, because we're currently doing some updates to the program, will be in 2024. So very, very soon.
That sounds awesome. Is there anything else you would like to add? And do you want to let us know where we can find you as well?
No, I think if anyone's really curious about HA or whether they have HA or just wanting to improve their relationship with food, I also have a podcast. So you can scroll through those episodes, Holistic Health Radio. So there's plenty to listen to. Otherwise, you can find me on all social media platforms at Sarah Liz King.
Cool. Sounds awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.